Hello, hello, Black people. Thank you all for tuning in to the Ugly Truth Manifesto. First off, my apologies. Since last week was skipped, I had some malfunctioning with a recording, so I figured we would resume today. Today's segment, we're going to be talking about continuing to change the mindset, and we'll call this segment Upgraded Perspectives. And I want to talk more about rearing of children and our youth in general. So what we're going to do is get into the 60-second reflection. I want you to get to a quiet place internally and identify areas you need to improve as far as parenting. And even if you don't have children, the youth that you impact, what areas could you improve? So we'll silence out here for 60 seconds. I'm still with you, and I'll be reflecting as well. All right, we're gonna wrap up our reflection. I'll start, of course, with myself, and hopefully everybody was able to make some identification. But my areas that I need to improve in most is being present mentally and being able to check myself and take my own inventory, especially in disciplining. And this is something I've been talking to some friends about here lately on Facebook, being able to identify whether something really requires quote unquote corporal punishment, where we're putting our hands on our kids. Is it because you're angry, or is it because the child did something that extreme? Recently, I was talking to some Facebook friends about the old philosophy, especially in our community, that you can beat something out of a child, which it doesn't work like that. Associations aren't always broken or bred with that type of, excuse me, reprimanding. You can love your child through different associations, praise them more, when they do something right, instead of just being so quick to reprimand them physically. You can also take things away. We all operate on rewards more than we think, like positive reinforcement. As far as like me and my children, they're big on their having their YouTube time or their excuse me, ice creams. Now, personally, excuse me, I've been trying to stray away from bribing or even reprimanding with food items, because sometimes that can breed other negative associations to where, once they become of age, they get to hoarding on the food level. And, sometimes you see it on TV. Like, I watch My 600-Pound Life frequently. And you hear it a lot, we weren't allowed this and we weren't allowed that, and it was taken away. Because sometimes the brain regulates things that are punishment as a need to over exceed or get it in excess, excuse me, when you're able to. So that's just something to be considered. I do not believe you can beat something out of a child. Again, it's just trauma building, excuse me. And sometimes you have to step outside yourself and try to look at the situation in the whole as somebody else. If you're grabbing your kids or dragging them or just yelling at them, how would this look to somebody else? Or if you've seen somebody else doing this, what would you say, or how would you feel? Excuse me. Because 10 or 15 years from now, when your children are sharing their life story or their childhood past, how would they recount it? And that's something I try to consider often. I don't want my kids to have that backstory that is just so traumatic that they spend half of their adulthood trying to heal when they're not in control of childhood. I really believe life happens in reverse. And I get the saying, once a man, twice a child. But we go through childhood with all the things we're just supposed to be able to navigate through, deal with, heal, etc. And then we're just supposed to be emotionally healthy adults. When for a lot of times it doesn't work like that. And I get it, parenting does not come with a handbook. I'm no parent guru by no means. It does take a village to raise a child. But that's just something that I really want to encourage everybody to think about. And then you also have to watch what you say to your children. And I know a lot of times we hear the things you shouldn't say. Excuse me, but nobody talks about the do's of parenthood. So that just goes back into rewarding and positive reinforcement. Excuse me, pick your child up. And I mean, of course, verbally. You know, you got to pat them on the back the same way we do with each other. You know, you'll see somebody, a friend, a loved one, a significant other, etc. And you may compliment them to the nines. Like, oh, I love your shoes. I love your hair. Do the same for your kid. Even, you know, it's something as simple as, yes, you bought those clothes, that haircut or that hairdo. Excuse me. But even 2 days after getting their hair done or cut, compliment them. You know, it's a simple practice, but it does well for self-esteem. Like another conversation I had with some friends, especially in our early years, childhood, and like teenage years, adolescence, we still look to outside forces for something that should be done internally. But as a kid, you cannot process that. So in order to have self-appreciation and self-love, you look to others for that thing. And another thing that I personally feel people should stop doing with each other, and I think the older we get, it kind of goes away on its own, but we'll often excuse me, ask our peers, you know, what do you like about yourself, or what would you change about yourself? I think those conversations should definitely die down. We should get more into just picking up everything, you know, oh, that is nice about you, and this is nice about you. Find a compliment anywhere at random times, just not when it's due. You know, if your kid, excuse me, perfect example, my 3-year-old has been potty training, and we're about a month in, and for the most part, he's got the hang of it. He has his accidents, and I have to remind myself to praise him, like, hey, you've been wearing underwear for like 3 weeks, you're doing good, you know, you're such a big boy, I'm so proud of you. Instead of waiting until he has an accident and be like, you know, you could have went to the bathroom. That's not how you make them want to continue on the right path. Their psyche is so fragile at that age, all throughout childhood, excuse me, and furthermore, even into adulthood, our psyches are still fragile. We just eventually learn how to process what we need, digest what we need, and get rid of what we don't. What doesn't serve us, excuse me, it's easier to throw away when you're older. But a lot of times you may hear or you may feel the bad often sticks. You know how they say nobody will ever remember the good you did, but the one time that you wronged them will be the one thing they never forget. So I hope that our community can work more with rearing our children to think differently. The greatest things my parents ever did for me was teaching me independent thought. And I know a lot of times we hear it, but we don't really take heed. You know, your parents might say, well, if everybody jumped off a bridge, you're going to jump too? As cliche as it is, it's pushing you towards independent thought. And that's what we need to push our children to. Like me and my kids, we do mantras. And it's just simple. I just make them repeat. I am a Black boy. I will own a business. I am powerful. And we end it, you know, with the Black power fist. And sometimes we'll just do like an array of Black power, and it's just interactive and it's fun. And they're 2 and 3, my younger ones that we're doing this with, and it seeps in, and I continue to ask them, are you powerful? And they've been saying it for however long, so they're like, yeah. Granted, they may not have a full definition of what powerful is, but in time, when those things come, they'll have that reference to go back to. And I think all of us can relate as adults. We have that reference book in our minds, our hearts, and everything. Oh, mama said, my dad always told me, you know, we're able to pull those things out. So don't think for a minute that just because they don't get it right now or it's not applicable, that you shouldn't speak to it or you shouldn't embed it in their minds. Continue to be positive. Also watching what you say in general about your own life or your own circumstances. Try to continue to be positive. I know things can get rough indeed, but You know how we say a kid needs to stay in a kid's place? Well, that burden is also on the parent too. It's not the kid's problem, excuse me, that, you know, things were shitty at work today. You know, maybe you're behind on the light bill or whatnot. Excuse me. So those are things we want to take into account. And again, just reshaping the mind of ourselves so that we can improve the mind of our youth. We all often ask, and we probably, most of us are asked as kids too. You know, we see your nieces and your nephews, your grandkids, whatever. You know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Let's stop that question. You know, because we continually pass on the idea that one should go to school, get good grades, go to college, and then find a job to make somebody else rich. And even if rich is not on your radar, you know, for things that you want, it may not be your idea of success, because so much is given, much is required. But let's start asking our kids, what do you want to create? You know, what would you make? What do you want to own? And have them start thinking entrepreneurially. So even if they do decide they want to work for somebody, it wasn't because only one lane was given to them and they felt they had to stay there. It was safe here. Hey, this is all I know. I see it all the time, especially in my line of work. For those who may be tuning in for the first time, I'm a mental health counselor. And since I'm a mental health counselor, I often see people who are comfortable in complacency and they don't even recognize it as such. It's just what they know. It's their day to day. It's how they get by. It's what they saw their mom do and their grandma do. So it's just normal. And like somebody once told me, somebody else's dysfunction is just fine. It's normal and they're able to function in it. We have to also redefine normalcy in our community. And I think that's a great thing. And again, all things start in the mind. Before you can say something, do something, you have to first think it. And a lot of people find it challenging to rewire the brain, because we often hear, oh, this is just who I am, this is just a part of me. And I'll call those excuses, because if you're ever presented with a challenging task that requires you to do something else, you're either given instructions or some type of pathway and you're able to figure things out, especially if it makes you think outside the box. That's all this is doing with retraining the brain. It's just trying to think outside the box. Unfortunately, today, I do not have any poetry to relate to our topic, but, you know, again, continue to tune in weekly and, you know, there will be more poetry. But let me also go back when I was speaking about changing what we say. Recently, I put up a post and I had some dialogue behind it. And I encourage everybody to stop saying love is work and life is hard, because those statements have to either be completely true or completely false. And I think in most instances, people learn that love is not always work and life is not always hard. Therefore, that statement is false. And often when we pass on those things of, oh, love is work, you know, we're telling our youth, we don't, you know, why seek love? Because it's hard, it's work. Nobody wakes up for the most part and is like, oh man, I got to go to work, I am so happy. And it's not to say you don't love your job, but there's always other things we'd rather be doing. And love is actually the most natural thing in the world. Recently, I was watching my toddler. They were just sleeping, taking a nap. And one reached over and he made contact with the other. And they just locked hands and they laid there for like 20 minutes holding hands, sleep. How natural is that? So for when somebody says love is work, and I'm like, that's a no work at all. It was like so subconscious. And it was comforting because nobody moved. Nobody woke up and was like, he's touching me. You know what I'm saying? So we have to retrain the brain to stop saying that. Like, you know, we often see, excuse me, you see anniversary of couples being married for like 50 years. And then everybody's like, what's the secret? You know, because I know relationships are hard. And it's not. It's really not. Now, if you're with the wrong person, it's definitely work. So we also have to be wise in our choices, and that also comes with time. And as parents, we have to set that example, and not just in our own relationships by picking and choosing the right significant other so that our children will understand what is acceptable and what's not, and they can set a standard and requirements for themselves. But we also have to love them. in a way that meets their standards and their requirements. And I'm actually going through this now. My three-year-old, we have a puppy, so we've been learning how to be gentle and be nice to each other. And because, you know, kids see dogs almost like experiments. You know, my two-year-old wanted to poke the dog in the eye, and I'm like, well, we cannot do that. They'll stand on his tail. They do everything under the sun because this is new, and we know kids are very explorative. So I often have to tell them, be gentle, and I have to demonstrate, what does be gentle mean with the puppy, you know? And then often, you know, with each other, when they're roughhousing, same thing, we have to say, be gentle. So sometimes when I'm on a rampage, and my three-year-old has to say, mommy, be gentle. And I got to take that, and I got to say, you know, I'm sorry, babe. And I got to come at him with what I know is pleasing to him. Being gentle, I cannot require him to do something to somebody else, and I can't do it with him. Because I will be their first demonstration of what love is, you know. And of course, all other adults, their father, their grandparents, all other adults, whoever they're up close and personal with, are your children's first examples of love. And, you know, we hear about it all the time. Listen, for the young girl who may not have a father, whether he's not present or he's inconsistent or, God forbid, he passed away. And we often find out it just affects them one or two ways. Either this female becomes overly loving, and almost sheltering in her relationships, or she's a quote unquote hoe. Because now she's looking for love in all the wrong places, because that example of how a man was supposed to love her was not passed down because there was no man present. Or maybe she watched her mother in and out of bad relationships, whether it be emotional, psychologically, or physically abusive. So again, we have to be careful of the things we allow in our space, because your kids are watching. You know, people always hear children are sponges. Up until the age 5, they're sponges. They're sponges. Don't do this in front of them, and don't say that in front of them. But nobody tells you what to do in front of them that will help aid them in becoming better. So that would be a tidbit of advice from me. Pick your partners wisely. Be loving to your children. Be loving to your partners and those that you encounter. I seen a young lady, I cannot call her name right now, but she has a very, very well-known presence on Facebook, and she was rearing her kids. She was actually doing a live video, and I forgot what she was sharing, but her children, I guess, were having like a dispute, and she's like, hold on, y'all, I gotta step into mommy mode. And, you know, she kind of held court with her kids. She let them air their sides of the story, talked about alternatives to fix the problem, and then she said, be loving or be nothing. And I thought that was a great, great thing to adopt. And I often find myself telling my kids the same thing. And that's another thing I tell my children all the time. You have a voice. I encourage parents to give the voice back to the children. Just because you have them and their children and they are quote unquote dependent at this time, it does not mean that they do not have thoughts, opinions, and feelings. Hear them out. Regardless if your mind is already made up, allow them to speak their mind. Like what I'm working with my 12-year-old is that to remind him he has a voice, and there's a respectful way for you to share your thoughts, feelings, and concerns. You know, attitude is just not going to cut it. It's not. But I'm willing to hear you out. You know, if I ask you to wash the dishes and you don't want to wash them, there's a respectful way to act for you to say, you know, hey, can I finish this movie and then wash the dishes, mom? And you're either going to get a yes or a no. And from there, I need you to comply, and then we can go on with our day. And that's just something I would like to see more in our community, because again, when we take the voice away from our children, they become adults with no voice. You know, somebody's just handing shit down the pipe and they just dealing with it. No, I can't leave this job because of this. And no, I can't leave this apartment, or I can't do this and I can't do that because of this, because nobody ever taught them to speak up for themselves. You know, you sit around and you take the voice away from the kids and they become adults. And you're like, we can't speak up for yourself. No, they can't. They never had to. They were never allowed to. You want to think for them, eat for them, and shit for them, and it does not work like that. And then you pass them off at 18, 19, and want them to be productive members of society. Unfortunately, that is not how the cookie crumbles. So I just want to encourage parents or anybody who has a presence in the life of a youth to encourage them to use their voice and just teach them the right way to do it. You know, a lot of things these days are fear-based operations. Let's take jobs, for example. if y'all don't start clocking in on time, then we're not gonna let you work at all. So now you at work 10 minutes early because somebody got you over a barrel over clocking in exactly on the dot. Like, you don't have to stand in line at some places and wait for somebody to use this one time clock, and it might take 5 minutes for everybody to clock in. I worked at Walmart a few years ago, and there may be 2 or 3 clock in stations, but if you're bringing in 20 people for one shift, how do we all clock in at 3 o'clock? You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm speaking of with fear-based operations. And take your own inventory and see if you are parenting on fear-based operation. You better do this, or I'm gonna do that, or you better hurry up, or you're not gonna do this. Like, let's try to reword things. Hey, if you can clean your room in 10 minutes, we're gonna have time to catch the ice cream truck. Simple things, because you're putting that same pressure on them with a different perspective. The end result is greater and the motivations are high, so you will have your needs met without you having to raise your blood pressure, going into threatening mode, and then setting that poor example. Another thing too, for my people who have boys and girls, personally I only have boys, but there's also that saying, especially in the Black community, we love our boys and we raise our girls. Let's end that. Let's love and raise them both. Yes, they're going to need different guidance and treatment, because as boys and girls, they will have different experiences. But your daughter is not your workhorse, and your son is not your surrogate. He's not your husband. He's not none of that. And again, I'm preaching to the choir, because, you know, I've also put up certain things. We see it all the time. My king, my world, my this. And I don't know exactly which one of those things I have used to describe my children, but excuse me, that's something I also had to stop, because they are not all, those are my kids. And it ain't no deeper than that. Love them to death. They will be somebody's king one day. And I tell them now they are kings so that they can grow into that. And we just talk about different things. And, you know, king also relating back to just being a man. And no, I cannot teach a boy how to be a man, but I can give him some blueprint, and then I can put him in front of others, their father, my brothers, their grandparents, that can teach them exactly what it is to be a man by whosoever definition. You know, if I deem them as a role model, then definitely by all means, let's work together and let's produce some men, because we have enough of the thugs and the dope boys and all. We got enough of that in our community. We need some men. We need some kings. We need somebody who is really ready to take back leadership of our community, you know, for the household, for the youth, for the women at times, because we need our men. We definitely do. And there's also that misconception, like, oh, I don't need a man. I hear a young lady who I have close contact with often say, oh, I'm a strong, independent woman. I don't need no man. And hats off to you if that's your belief system. I'm not here to change your belief system, but let me encourage you to just think a little differently. I do not believe you need a man to be a woman, because you are a woman by definition, by gender, by whatever. You are just a woman. You know what I'm saying? And not just a woman as in, you know, a degrading way of saying, excuse me, but you are a woman and you don't need a man to be that. But if you're going to bring kids into this world, if you want to be married or whatever, you do need a man. You know, if you need a 400-pound piano coming into your front door, you might need a man, or you're going to need 1,000 women. Like, let's be honest, we can't do it all. We can do a lot. And the role reversal in our community is very, very disturbing. Again, the women have become the workhorse. Excuse me. And our men have become stay-at-home moms, you know. And it does have something to do with how we're raised. I was speaking with an old friend of mine, excuse me, and she deals with some independent businesses, and a young man was hired, and maybe he was 17, I don't know, and he was scheduled to, let's say, 11 o'clock. Mom called and said, hey, you got to be home at 8. She didn't care that, you know, he was at work or whatever the case was, and whatever she needed him for was neither here nor there. But what she did in that instance was show him that work was not that important. You know, being able to obtain means to take care of self was not that important, that A, she will take care of him, be what she says, go see. And that takes away independent thought. If you allow your child to get a job and you don't establish, you know, what are the guidelines, you need to be home at this time, you know, whether it's transportation issues, maybe he had to assist with homework, siblings, who knows? But that's another thing. And I can almost bet money that if it was a daughter in that situation, this person's daughter, that girl would have been at work until 11 or 11:30. Because we don't even realize that we're breeding our women to be just like us, and then we're coddling our boys so that they don't know how to be men when it's time to be men. I know a young man years ago, we were about 25, and we were going to open a bank account, and he couldn't speak for himself. Or let me say, he didn't want to, because he didn't know what to say. He never opened a bank account. His living skills were very, very scarce. And I just thought it was sad. You know, he really lived by keeping his money in the shoebox and keeping it under the mattress. And I'm not saying there's something wrong with that, but you can't have all of your money there. You know, God forbid your house burns down, somebody robs you, and they find your stash, and now you have nothing. You know, of course, somebody's going to say, well, banks ain't all that secure either. No, they're not. But if you listen to the last podcast, we did cover some things that show different ways to house your money, so that if something happens with the bank, with your home, wherever you may house your money, there are other options that will have your funds secure. So I encourage you to go back if you weren't able to listen to it and just kind of see what works for you, and if you're not already applying those to your life and your finances. But back to parenting, I just want to encourage everybody, like, do not coddle your boys. My boys, no, are not allowed to be coddled. My 12-year-old has been driving since he was 9. And my 10-year-old at the time, he's just not tall enough to drive yet. But he's got behind the wheel. He's got some ins and outs of it. I even put my 2- and 3-year-old on my lap and let them cut the wheel. Like, if we're going to set everybody up for independence, let it be everybody. This world has run on Black women alone for a very long time, but it doesn't have to. And the community itself definitely shouldn't have to, you know. But that'll be a topic for another day, because there's a lot of disconnect between the Black man and the Black woman. But right now we want to speak in terms of parenting. But on the Black man tip, I want to salute the fathers that I see and the fathers that I don't see that are out there that are doing things and taking care of their children. Being an absent father does not mean, being a non-custodial father does not mean you're completely absent. So I just want to take hats off to you all and to the rest of them. I would encourage you to step up, you know, and if you have a quote unquote friend or a family member that you know is a deadbeat father, like, kind of have a man to man with them, a heart to heart. Encourage them to be a part of these kids' lives, because it makes a very big difference, a very big difference. One of my kids is yearning for his father's attention. And the other child that I had by this man, he's kind of like, oh, whatever, you know, he ain't been around, I don't care. You know, but not all kids have that, especially at this age. And again, that just is the start of building trauma. The start of building a lifetime of trying to repair. And I've had a conversation with one of my siblings who tell me, look, there's some grown men that can't get over the fact that their father wasn't there. And it's not something as mothers or whoever is raising the child can fix. That's something that either the absent parent needs to step up and fix, or that child has to just go through life and try to figure out, like, how do I be okay? You know, but on the inside, they're like, well, why wasn't I good enough? You know, why he didn't show up? I looked around at my games and you weren't there, or I had this thing at school and I said my dad was coming and you didn't come. I was ready on my birthday, you know, and you said you was going to be there. And even though it's the 3rd year, I still waited for you. Not many kids can grasp that. Oh, well, you know, the relationship just ain't there. I don't need him or her, whoever the absent one is. Because we know fathers aren't the only ones who are absent. We do have moms who completely back out of motherhood. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not excusing those either. If you're backing out just because and you haven't set any guidelines as far as, you know, maybe you gave custody to the grandparents and only thing you can contribute is finances at the time, or maybe you can't contribute finances, so you try to step in where you can, how you can, as long as you are stable enough, whether it's physically healthy, emotional healthy, to be in this child's life, and your consistency is up to par. And that goes for the mother and the father, whoever the absent parent is. I just want to encourage my community to pull together with the youth. I know we do a lot of head turning. And by that, I mean, you know, you might see a kid out in the street and be like, well, where is his mama? But if you see them doing something wrong, you can just simply say something. You know, and of course, you may be addressed by the parent. I know you wasn't telling my kid this, that, and the third. It can definitely be a lot of red tape. But we have to get back to the days when it took a village to raise a child, and the village actually raised the child. The last thing I want to touch on is encouraging families to speak with your kids about trauma. Ask them, you know, do you feel like you had a good childhood? Were there some things that were hard to deal with? Let's talk about sexual assault, because I haven't met one female, and I've met plenty of men who have dealt with sexual assault, you know, and I'm not placing the burden solely on the adult at the time, because I don't know everybody's circumstances. I don't know where mom was or where grandma and daddy were at, you know, when this was happening to these individuals. I don't know. But for those who had to deal with repeat offenses, somebody may have turned their head. So let's not be those parents. Let's not pass down the traumas and from our childhood to the childhoods of our kids, because you know what happened to me, so, and I turned out all right. 9 times out of 10, you didn't. A lot of us end up on somebody's couch. You know, when I was a kid and I'm trying to deal with this, and some days I just can't see a way out. We got to talk about it. I ask my kids all the time, somebody touch you? We talk about, we identify private parts. The only reason why somebody should be touching private parts, you know, for my little ones, is those who are, you know, in the position to be changing diapers, whether it be babysitter, parents, you know, things of that nature. But we're not just passing around children and body parts. We're not doing it. I ask my oldest kids all the time, did somebody touch you? You know, we talk about what sexual assault looks like. And then we talk about if they've experienced any. And we talk about the ramifications. If I ever hear that we've experienced sexual assault, mama is going to jail. I'm a pray to be the bigger person and call the law and do this, that, and the third. But I will not turn my head when my children go through things that they will spend their life trying to recover from. And I hope and pray that everybody else, especially in my community, can say the same thing. And not just say it, live it. Because we often hear, oh no, it wouldn't be my child, couldn't be me, you know. And it'd be the same things. My kids were going to a Boys and Girls Club almost like 5 years ago. They were like 7 and 8. And one of the young girls that was going there, my son came home and was like, mommy, what's rape? And my antennas went up and I was like, what? So we had the conversation and I was like, what brought upon this question? Well, so-and-so said her stepdaddy raping her all the time. Excuse me. And I was just like, oh my goodness. You know, so I spoke with the people I need to speak to try to pass this information along. So hopefully something was done. Excuse me, but these are the things. That's why I go back to say, be careful with who you choose. I know that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde don't just show up, you know, with the evil side out and be like, yeah, you know, I like kids, so word. No, it doesn't happen like that. They show up with the flowers. They want to take the kids on the picnics and to the water park. And, you know, they miss the perfect. But watch your child's behavior. That'll sometimes tell you all you need to know. And another example, like I told you, my 3-year-old's potty training. And he was doing like great, great. Then one day the babysitter's like, he peed on himself 3 times today. And I'm like, okay, we try to find out a reward system and positive reinforcement. I had to take something from him, whatever, certain consequences. The next day it's like, he peed on himself again. And I'm like, dude, what is up? He was like, I'm going to get a whooping. I was like, no, you're not going to get a whooping. But you've been in draws for 3 weeks. Why are we peeing ourselves now? And then I had to let the situation go for a second. So we're driving home. And he's like, mommy, I went to the bathroom. And they locked me in there. And my friends went open the door. And I'm like, his friends are probably 3. This is daycare, right? So I brought it back to the babysitter. And I was like, well, I did forget to mention that at home. He used to the bathroom with the door open. If he closes the door, he's going to have a fit. So he won't go back in your bathroom because it's hard to open. So once he goes in there, he's like, I'm locked in. Separation anxiety kicks in. Fuck you in your bathroom. I'll pee on myself. I just won't have ice cream. I won't be able to watch YouTube. It's cool, but I won't be locked in the bathroom. that association came that fast for him. And once we had set it up to where now his brother will go with him to the bathroom, or one of the helpers in the daycare will go with him to the bathroom, we haven't had an accident since. So that's why I'm encouraging you to watch the behaviors of your kids. Talk to them. Definitely talk to them. Don't assume that because they're not bringing up the conversation, nothing's happening. Because number one, they're probably scared. You know, you got to remember, when people are being abused, the abuser has to start with breaking down the psyche. So they have to either win them over, like, hey, this is our little secret, you know, don't you want to be cool and have a secret with me? Or they're like, if you tell anybody, I'll kill you. You know, manipulation at its finest. So again, I encourage you, have these conversations with your kids. Talk to them about what sexual assault looks like. And, you know, per child, you determine when to start having those conversations. In the meantime, you have to do diligence with watching the behavior of your kids, watching who you bring your kids around and leave them with, especially. And just recapping, we're going to hopefully, as a community, work with each other, work with ourselves and our kids to reshape the mind. Like, let's build future leaders. Don't just teach them that old thing of just go and do it. Just go and do it. And, you know, don't ask any questions. Keep your head down. You know, be seen and not heard. Bullshit. One of my good friends said a long time ago, my mouth is not put on backwards. And for those of you who may have never heard that saying, that means it works. I'm going to use it. And then we teach them how to use it the right way, especially in the home. Because, you know, that's where a lot of our lessons start. You know, if you let your kid say whatever to you, what do you think you're going to say to the teacher? You know, sometimes when I'm working or I'm just out in the community and I hear kids like cursing and stuff, and I'm like, oh, not when we were kids, you know, because somebody was going to slap your ass and then call your mama. You know, but I get it, it's a different world now, and people, I guess, are being open. And then we have people who want to be friends with their kids. I mean, I say to each his own. Personally, that doesn't work for me, because I'm not your friend. We ain't peers. I can't call you when the light bill due. We is not tight like that. I love you to death, but we got a parent-child relationship. Now, when you grow up and you carry your own weight, I'll be mama and your homegirl. But right now, mama. So, please, 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 take heed to whatever you feel was good information. Share it. Again, you got to share the knowledge to share the wealth. Reinvent the wheel. And by that, I mean, change the way you think. Upgrade your perspectives. You know, build those future leaders of tomorrow. Feed them. And also, don't restrict kids to age in what you think is their ability. You know, because I see it all the time. You know, a video went viral. I think baby girl was about 1 year old. And her and her mom were having, like, hair salon talk. And this girl, oh my goodness, she was, like, sharp as a tack with this conversation. Which brings me to my next point. We have to stop with the baby talk, you know, and I am dealing with this myself. You know, get a baby, it's like, oh, him so cute, what him doing? And then they start talking, like my three-year-old, him and watching TV. And I'm like, that didn't even make sense, you know, but it does make sense, because that's how I spent talking to him for the first year of his life. Instead of saying, he is, what is he doing? You know, if you want to dress it up and da-da-da-da-da when you're talking to them, but you could still talk in complete sentences. Talk to them like you would talk to one of your friends or somebody in a job interview, because I've looked into it about how accents and stuff were developed. They literally just repeat what they hear. And you have to remember, direct contact is going to be more embedded than what they hear you doing with others. So the way you talk to them is how they will talk to the world, not how you talk to your boss. Your parents, they're not going to pick that up and store it in their brain like, that's how you talk. No, mommy keep asking me what him doing, so him must be doing. We have to think about those things and try to be conscious of it. Excuse me. And that's something I'm definitely putting into play. And then just, like, I sat down with my three-year-old the other day, and I'm like, hey, what do you think the correlation of mental health and mass incarceration is? And he was like, ABC. I'm like, okay. You know, but I won't discredit that he has a thought process and that he only can digest certain things. Whether he knows what I'm talking about or not, I'm going to talk to him, because one day he's going to have that reference point. He's going to be able to go back and say, we've we've had certain conversations before. I met a 10-year-old over the weekend, and this guy, you know how we say, oh, he's been here before. Yes, definitely hats off to that mom, because she is definitely doing something right in that village that is helping raise that boy. Kudos to them. Let's help our kids shape their minds. Let's advocate for independent thought. Let's change the questions we ask them. Let's change the way we speak to them and each other. Let's change the way we speak about circumstances. And if we want a kid to stay in a kid's place, let's make sure we leave them there. Let's not call them in. This bitch put a post on Facebook. I'm a fucker. Oh, okay. That's not really for the kid, for you to talk about with the kid. You know what I'm saying? And definitely trying to wrap up, but my brain is going a mile a minute. So much stuff I've been taking in. But another thing for my community, can we stop, please stop threatening our kids, like with the, if you don't beat his ass, I'm gonna beat your ass. Guess what? Everybody's not a fighter. Everybody does not like to fight. I fell victim to that thought process years ago. My now 10-year-old came home crying. I'm like, are you crying? You ain't punch him in the mouth. No, you don't punch him in the mouth, because he don't want to punch nobody in the mouth. He wants to get the fuck up out of there because he don't like confrontation. He's very calm. He want to read a book, and he want to go home, and he wants to feel safe. You know, and I was glad that he was able to tell me in his way at that age what he prefers. He's not like that, but I thought I had to adopt the mindset of my environment when I don't. And it's okay to be different. Trust and believe. You know, if you have to quote unquote live in the hood because that's all you can afford right now, you do not have to act like those who live around you. Set the standard. Do something different. Teach your kids something different. So please, let's change that. Everybody's not a fighter, and it's only in our community that whoever can throw hands the best really fucking matters. Because guess what? When we go sit down for the job interview, ain't nobody telling you get up, put your hands up. This ain't slavery days when they looking at our men with their shirts off and like, oh yeah, he's a real bulldozer right here. You know, big strong lad. That shit don't go on no more. It doesn't. And we got to break the cycle. You know, kids nowadays, they living for that shit. They want to fight at every turn. And for the parents. Because some parents are still out here fighting. We got to stop that. Conflict can be resolved with communication. I know we got a lot of shit going on with our police and a lot of racial injustice. But if it must be that you have to call law enforcement, you know, do what you feel is necessary. But try conflict resolution with communication. Try to remove yourself if you can. Get some type of peer mediation. There are a lot of ways to handle conflict, and it's not always hand-to-hand combat. So I encourage everybody, again, if something was in here that was useful to you, apply it, pass it on, share the knowledge, share the wealth. I love you all. Stay Black. And thank you again for tuning in to the Ugly Truth Manifesto, where we explore life, liberty, and the pursuit of all things Black. And if all is well, I'll see you guys again on Monday.